Hello, this is the Scottish Football Show, and here's what's coming up. The School of Hard Warnocks. What will Aberdeen learn as they announce Neil Warnock as their new boss? Happy Hearts with Naismith at the helm. And we need to talk about Kevin Van Veen. Hello, listeners. I am your host, Andrew Slavin. Welcome along to another absolute wild weekend of Scottish football. It's going to be an interesting one this week because I am hanging. Joining me on the show this week, back once again for the Renegade Master, it's Melbourne City's Finlay Marks. Finlay, let's get it out of the way. Is it Scorchio out there in Melbourne?
Yeah, bloody Scorchio. I was trying to explain to my wife what Scorchio means, because I think to a lot of British people, you'd know exactly, you know, it's the fascio, it's like the Spanish weather presenter. But obviously, they never had the fascio over here. So I was trying to explain what Scorchio meant. 38 degrees today, so I've been dying for most of it inside.
Somewhere. Oh, lovely. Very nice. Very nice. Well, also rounding off our trio this week, it's pod favourite and Sky Sports deputy producer, Andrew Dixon. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. I think this is the first time I've ever retained my place ever at anything. That's two in a row. I've never done that before. So.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's all right. Yeah, it's not Scorchio here. I'm at my in-laws because somebody has managed to chop the broadband cable that serves our house. And I had to get up at 4 o'clock this morning to do some work. And it was about 8 degrees in the house, never mind outside the house. So it's very much not Scorchio at
all. Third world problems, man. Getting your broadband cut off. My goodness, this is weird being sandwiched in between two big baldy guys. I feel like I'm like some sort of gangster being looked after. Where should we kick things off? Because I did mention I am hanging, and I will try and tie this show together as best as I can. But Finn, where should we start?
Well, I reckon if we do a wee follow-up to the transfer tavern that we had on the show last week, just purely because not an awful lot really happened. I think we were all primed for a bit of movement in the last couple of days, and absolutely hee-haw ended up transpiring. The two biggest stories, I think, from the transfer window, or supposed stories that there was a lot of rumours about, were what would happen to Shankland and Miovski. And they both ended up staying, both ended up scoring, of course, this weekend as well. I think probably the biggest news was that last season's top goal scorer in the Premiership, Kevin Van Veen, signed on at Killy. There was strong interest as well from St Mirren and his former club Motherwell as well, but he's joined up with Derek McInnes at Rugby Park, which, looking at their attacking options, it's pretty decent. Like, you've got Van Veen, Danny Armstrong, Greg Stewart, who they just signed as well from the Indian Premier League, Matty Kennedy, Gary Mackay-Stevens, Marley Watkins and Kyle Vassell. That's decent.
Very, very, very good. I know Kevin Van Veen's been in the country for a while because he had a kid over here, right? So his parent club, Groningen, gave him, you know, leave for his missus to, you know, give birth, which is very nice. But he's been in the country for a while, and I remember there was touts of him going to Rangers, which was absolutely agent pish to try and get some dirt kicked up to try and get someone interested in him. Are you happy to see him back, Andrew, in the Scottish Premiership? He's someone who's scored a lot of goals.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the name of the game, isn't it? So he did very, very well at Motherwell. So yeah, absolutely. Fair play to Kelly for getting him in as well, because I think having had such success at Motherwell, probably quite a few people would have assumed, oh, he'll just go back to Motherwell then. But Kelly have come in and made an offer there up against competition from a couple of other teams. And be interesting to see how he does, you know, if he's got family ties here as well, would he not want to stay here beyond the summer? Every chance he probably would. So quite an interesting one to see how that one pans out. I'll make a bit of an admission as a guy that works for Sky Sports News. I can't really be bothered with deadline day at times. it's touted a little bit as kind of Christmas twice a year for sports journalists, but I historically, and I've been at Sky for not far off 9 years, I've had far more deadline days that have not really been that exciting than deadline days that have been absolutely gripping and, you know, like drama. When it gets going, it's great, but this was pretty underwhelming. And, you know, I think it comes from the top, if you like. And when I say the top, I mean like the very top league. So you look at England and money's not really been spent there, and you look at Germany, you know, and there's a lot of loan deals going on, and but there's not really a lot of permanent transfers, and the wild excessive spending, which you only have to go back to like the summer or the previous summer, absolutely not a hint of it, because everybody's panicking about financial fair play and making sure the books balance and what have you. So I think that just it feeds down. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a sideshow, really, isn't it, I suppose, at times, because it takes you away from the football. I mean, obviously, we've had the winter break as well, so there's not been, even been that much football. But, you know, you're putting all this energy and effort and time into, oh, who's going to move? Who's going to move? And, you know, then it turns out not actually that many people do move. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I found the whole thing, particularly this January, to be even more underwhelming than it often can be.
I think there's two things that maybe increasingly will probably ensure that this is the more regular type of deadline day. The main thing is it goes back to something you've alluded to slightly earlier on, Andrew, about FFP, so the financial fair play, which is mm-hmm. clubs have to, they have to, especially if you're the size of a Scottish club, because you're not big enough to lawyer up or take on FIFA or do anything else like maybe some of the bigger EPL teams are. You have to do everything by the book. And then there's also the fact that in January, if you're signing a player, people know you're kind of desperate. So there's always like, it's more expensive to buy the same player in January than it probably would be in a summer transfer window. So it's quite a risky, edgy time for clubs to be doing business. Diamande, the midfielder that Rangers brought in from the Danish league, is a loan with an obligation to buy, which means they will buy him, they have to, for £4.5 million, but that will be done in the summer. And that's literally just to move it off the books for this year into next year, which is something that businesses and football teams and everything do all the time, because you want to balance for the financial years that you've got. So if you've got a big asset coming in right now, you can offset it for 6 months or 12 months in order for it to balance the books, where you know you've got more money coming in the next year or whatever, which is all kind of like boring way of going around it. But because of our Scottish football's position in the food chain of world football, it is a trickle-down thing. You have to wait for the big teams and the big leagues to do their moves and their businesses first, for then the cash and the spaces and everything to roll up going down the leagues and through the other countries. And that didn't really materialize because nobody else can afford it. Some of the EPL teams can, but even teams in Germany, Spain, they're struggling. A lot of them do the deferred transfer fees and everything like that. So a lot of it has to wait until the last minute, and increasingly there's not going to be business being done. My favorite tweet I saw was from a Celtic fan who'd said, you know, the news that they were probably trying to bring in a couple of players. They were looking at a left back, maybe a goalkeeper, maybe a striker, like all of this stuff. And he'd written saying, you do have to admire Celtic treating the transfer window like a uni student remembering that they have a 4,000 word essay due in 6 hours and haven't even started it yet. Because that's kind of what the whole vibe felt with bringing in the lad from Norwich on loan, and they were trying to do a bit of business. But I think increasingly that's kind of what it's going to be like going forward.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
The Challenge Cup final is going to be played between Ayrgyonians and TNS from Wales, because they beat Falkirk. What do you take on this? I mean, obviously, there's a number of different clubs from different countries, Northern Ireland, Wales and England, that are invited to this Challenge Cup. It came in a few years ago. This should be celebrated. Yes? Oh, I mean, no, they got to the final. This isn't right.
I can understand why these teams were brought in terms of mixing it up a little bit and trying to galvanise it and do something different with it. It makes Scottish football look tin pot to have a part-time Welsh team who habitually get horsed in the early stages of European qualifiers being a finalist in our competition. Like, I mean, even like forgetting their European record and all the rest, so it doesn't matter if they're good or whatever. They shouldn't be there. And it's nothing against them. I can't imagine that them having to keep travelling up and down to Scotland is doing their finances much good either. You know, it could be wrong with them. I think if you're having to take that kind of step to keep the competition fresh and to keep it in people's minds, is it worth continuing with the competition? I would understand completely if it brought in loads of money, you know, and you just, you put up with the few extra games every season for the sake of, oh, well, we're getting quite good cash out of it. I don't see where that money is coming from. And if nobody's really interested in it anyway, it kind of begs the question, why would you continue? All the best to Airdrie and to the new Saints, but it's a competition over the years has caught my eye less and less rather than more and more. And when you're taking steps to bring in other teams to try to freshen it up a bit, and that's the end result for somebody, that, you know, for me, that asks big questions about the longevity of the competition.
I think that's a fair point to make. I think one thing that I've read about the competition that fans of certain clubs have said, and it's maybe a bit of a counter argument to it, is the fact that, like, you know, if you're a fan of, say, Alloa or Falkirk or something like that, it's probably a stretch to think that you'll see your team competing in Europe at any point. So the chances of a meaningful away day and doing things are very slim. And actually, to have, as unglamorous as it sounds, potentially draw a team away in Northern Ireland or in Wales, that's an away day that otherwise you would probably never have. And it means something because it's for an actual round in a cup. I wouldn't ever be closed off to ways of reinvigorating or innovating a certain competition, because I think we've seen, you know, with the League Cup in Scotland is a great example, where they brought in the format of the early rounds being as like mini leagues before it gets into the knockout stage. And I think that's been great because we even saw it this season. You see some of the teams that should be expected to get through their groups really struggling. I think St Johnstone were abysmal in their group stage. And then you see some other clubs, you know, starting the season brilliantly, flying, and it can send you off for the whole season. So things like that are really important. But I agree with you, maybe it's a bit of a stretch looking at teams from outside of Scotland to come in and do it. And if you're needing to go to those extremes or including B-sides from other teams in the competition as well, maybe it's worth looking at the longevity of that competition.
I'm just going to say, Dunfermline fans, Dunfermline, well done tonight. You pumped this, nae twa doots.
From one Diddy Cup to another, perhaps. Can I talk about the Nations League, stepping away from domestic football and going into some international chat? Don't know why I did that with my hands, like that guy from Talladega Nights. Don't know what I'm doing with my hands. The Nations League draw kicks off on Thursday, and we are, as Scotland, we are in League A. We're in the top bracket now. And funnily, or one to point out, that England aren't in League A, they're in League B. That's as far as the fun goes, though. Now, usually Laura would be our first port of call for news like this to break it down, but she's away in Kosovo this weekend. Lucky her. Which is why she's not on the show, but she did manage to send us this wee explainer of how the draw is going to work and why it won't potentially be a great tournament for Scotland.
Sorry I can't be on the show this week, guys, because I'm on holiday, but I thought I'd give you a quick breakdown of the Nations League because I know you guys need a little help with it, and I'm a total international geek, so I can decipher all this for you. So the Nations League draw is coming up on Thursday, and we're obviously in League A. At the time, it was fun to celebrate, get up England and such, but actually, when you break it down, it's not really that great being in League A. Just be reminder, Nations League was obviously created to end international friendly. So UEFA think of it as an actual tournament. But in reality, the only real benefit, especially for teams of our size, is to use it as an alternative qualification route, which is exactly what we have done in previous years. But in being in League A, and specifically being in League A on a World Cup season, i.e. the one we're about to start in September, is actually the worst possible time to be in League A, and we'd actually benefit more from being in it in 2 years' time. So this is why. So the only way we can secure a playoff via the Nations League is to win our group outright. That's it. Come top, and let's face it, that's highly unlikely because we're going to be playing some of the best teams in the world. If all teams in League A qualify the traditional way, the playoff slot does not cascade down to the teams who don't. So this means if we finish bottom of our group, we can't steal the playoff spot purely because everyone else in League A has already qualified. This is what happens on years when the Nations League is connected to the Euros. And that would be perfect for us. But instead, we simply just do not get a playoff place unless we win our group. It's different on World Cup years. So let's break down what actually happens depending on where we finish in our group. If we finish top, great, we get a playoff place for World Cup, we progress to the knockout stages of the Nations League, we actually have a chance of winning it. Mental, I know. Then if we come second in the group, we progress to the knockout stages of the Nations League to then play teams who came first and play knockouts to potentially win the tournament. If we come third in a group, and this is where it gets interesting, we have the relegation playoff to determine whether we stay in League A or go down to League B. This part is crucial for Euro 2028 qualifiers because of what I just explained. If we are in League A for the 2027 tournament and we don't win a group, we could still get a qualification place by it cascading down. Long and short of it is, we don't really benefit from being in League A now, but we might do in 2 years' time. So it's in our best interest to stay in League A, even though we won't really get much out of it in the short term. If we come fourth in the group, it's automatic relegation to League B. The knock-on effect of that is, and it was only just announced with the World Cup plans for 2026, is the qualifiers will have either teams of four or teams of five. If we finish fourth in our Nations League group, we can then start our qualifiers, the traditional qualifiers, as early as March, which means we are much more likely to get a team of five, which is a lot more fun. If we come third in the Nations League, four or five teams. If we come first or second, we are absolutely guaranteed to get a team of just four in the World Cup qualifiers, because we then can't start our qualification campaign until September 2025. League A is a wee bit different when it comes to the traditional qualifiers. The long and short of it is, League A will not provide us with a backdoor qualification to the World Cup unless we come top of our group. But we want to stay in League A so that we do get that benefit in 2 years' time. So bring it on.
I think the Nations League has actually served a pretty good purpose. I've actually been pleasantly surprised by how successful it has been. And I think Scotland are a great example of a team that part down to the Nations League's existence has been allowed to grow and has been able to flourish a little bit more. Yeah. So yeah, I think in this occasion it might just be we have to just bite the bullet, you know, if we're drawn against other teams that are a bit better than us. And listen, don't get me wrong, I don't think we'd go into a Group A and come out with 0 points at all. Even against the better teams, you know, we saw against Spain that Scotland could be competitive. Games against Germany, Spain, Netherlands, they're good tests, and I think the natural evolution of the squad under Steve Clarke has probably got it to a point now that it's ready to take on games like that. Whether it comes through them or not, you know, that's another matter. Go into it with a bit of optimism, but a bit of realism as well.
And Marshall has saved! Yes! One big yes!
Right, well, as I speak, Aberdeen may already have a new manager by the time you're listening to it. And everyone will already know that Neil Warnock, as we record, widely tipped to take over at the Dons as interim boss until the end of the season. This all comes after the board sacked Barry Robson as manager at the end of January, with the club currently sitting eighth position and only 6 points clear of the relegation playoff place. So joining us to sift through the Dons debris is Glenn Schroeder, host of the Red Tinted Glasses podcast, an Aberdeen supporters podcast. So Glenn, how are you, mate? How are you doing?
I'm good, Andrew. Thanks very much for getting me on. Not that we've got plenty to talk about just with Aberdeen in general, but we've gone and thrown Neil Warnock into the mix as well.
This is nice having two hosts just slinging fists and finding out what the answers are. But you're the man that should have the best kind of feeling. Or you know, you can tell us what the fans are really saying about this, because your phone must have been blowing up, like with all your mates talking about Aberdeen and Neil Warnock's. His name has been around Scottish football for a while, tipped for a few roles here and there. Did it catch you off guard?
It caught me off guard. I think it caught everybody off guard. I mean, he certainly flirted with Scottish football for a long time, I think it's fair to say. You know, reading some of the stuff he's said, where he's mentioned applying for the Aberdeen job and speaking to Lauren DeJaffo about it, but never getting a call back. I think he was interested in the Hearts job before Naismith got it, similarly with Nick Montgomery at Hibs. So he seems to talk about this affiliation with the Scottish game, but never actually having the chance to manage in it. Mm-hmm. And to think he's going to rock up at Aberdeen and get the 10-week job that he so much craves, it is absolutely madness. And the interesting thing seems to be the kind of reaction amongst not just Aberdeen fans, but Scottish football fans in general. I'm personally excited by the impending appointment of, just as you said, as we record, it's not yet confirmed. But there's obviously some fans who have quite a bit of hesitation because of maybe what he brings in terms of baggage. I personally don't think he has as much as some of the other names that were touted.
It's interesting because, you know, he is such a big character. We've had great characters in the game. Lee Johnson, everyone's enjoyed the Johnsonisms that we had at Hibs, but ultimately not successful enough to stay in a job. This is a bit interesting and it's a bit different because it seems to be is that it will be an interim basis. So this will be to get to the end of the season. Do you think the board are doing it the right way now compared to the previous appointments in the past where they've tried to get it right? You know, this is an Aberdeen who have got rid of managers halfway through a season in the last three seasons.
Yeah.
I think it's like five managers in the last 3 years or whatever.
Yeah, it's impressive going for a club that was stable under Derek McInnes, as I'm sure many will point out. But Warnockisms have got the opportunity to make Lee Johnsonisms look small fry in comparison in this short window.
He's going to eat a few referees, isn't he?
He is. And, you know, what a game to start him off with, a trip to Ibrox. That'll be an eye-opener for him. Look, I think it's an interesting one because obviously there was an article, I think Tyrone Smith broke from the BBC, about how Aberdeen's doing kind of a full external review of the footballing operations, including top level right down through to the academy. I heard Willie Miller on the radio speaking about the caretakers looking at us right in the face after obviously leaving, getting us that 1-1 draw against Celtic. And you could kind of get hypnotised a little bit by the interim and the caretaker winning a few games a la Barry Robson. The interesting kind of point around Neil Warnock's impending appointment would be the cost involved. He's not going to come cheap, and I'm sure neither's anybody that he brings in terms of coaching as well. So I'm sure fans are going to have concerns around the money side that we're looking to spend on Neil Warnock and where that could have been spent elsewhere. But I think it's a really savvy appointment in terms of, certainly up until the draw at the weekend, I've more been looking over my shoulder against what the teams below us have been doing, kind of potentially falling into the same mould as a Dundee United, Hibs and Hearts, where you can sleepwalk into a relegation fight. Neil Warnock's got that history of turning teams around that have been in that sort of area and quickly propelling them up the table. He did that last season at Huddersfield, for example. I think it's quite telling that the club are already kind of ruling out third place. I think fourth place is still achievable. You look at kind of some of the recruitment other teams have done, has been impressive compared to us especially. But fourth, and we're still in the Scottish Cup, obviously coming up this weekend as well. So our season's not dead and buried, despite how poor it feels like it's been. There is an opportunity there, and it's probably something that appeals to Neil Warnock, a Scottish Cup run and potentially getting Aberdeen into Europe. But again, these interim managers come with that caveat. If they do well, what does the board then do?
Yeah, but this is the next appointment. It's not just this appointment. If Warnock comes in interim, it has to mean that the club get it right next time. The pressure on Alan Burrows and Dave Cormack is huge, because I remember the likes of Barry Robson when he just started coaching, and there was a lot of praise, a lot of people. I mean, I'm sure you know yourself, when he started coaching the youth teams, everyone was saying he's got a really interesting future. It's tough to take a job at Aberdeen.
Yeah, and I think I even said on the podcast myself that if Barry was to, you know, eventually part ways with the club, kind of, I think it was November, December, I'd been quite happy for him to step back down to the 18s, because he'd been doing such a good job with the likes of Conor Barron, Alfie Bavage, got his first senior hat-trick at the weekend. He's had that kind of influence on a lot of the young players that have come through at Aberdeen. And I do feel a bit sorry for Barry losing his job and now being out of the club completely. But it's just one of those kind of opportunities where you've got that experience mould in Neil Warnock to come in as a stopgap. And if that experience it obviously works for both parties in terms of a short-term appointment, Warnock will be happy with it, the club will be happy with it. If that affords us enough time to make the right appointment in the summer, then I think supporters should be happy with it. I totally understand why there will be concerns in the Aberdeen support. And I think you make an excellent point. It's purely as well because of the amount of pressure that is on Cormac and Burrows when it does come to the summer and making that appointment.
I just wonder, you said yourself, fourth place isn't inconceivable. There's a lot of football still to play, like 14, 15 matches or whatever. Should that be the ultimate goal? Should Aberdeen fans be expecting Neil Warnock to come in and completely rip up? Because that's what he does. He rips things up. Whatever the culture is at a football club, he will go, nah, we're getting rid of that. What's that? No, no chance. Even if he is there for 4 or 5 months, he's going to rip the walls off.
Yeah, he's gonna ruffle a few feathers, as we said, not just in Scottish football. I'm sure he's going to ruffle some feathers at Cormac Park. I think, again, that was the debate I saw on social media today about the style of football that he's going to bring. You know, Aberdeen have this whole football philosophy where we're supposed to be playing an exciting, attacking brand of football, which Barry Robson's gone completely against. And a lot of people believe that Neil Warnock would go against as well. Yeah. But ultimately, last season, when Barry Robson came in, he played a style of football that made us hard to beat and grind out results. If Neil Warnock can come in and stop us conceding goals and stop us conceding sloppy goals, and we do win a couple of games, ugly 1-0s, fans will quickly get on board with that. And, you know, we've also got to remember we've got a couple of games in hand against the teams above us as well. If we can close that gap, and I mean, I'm not saying those games are instantly winnable because we've already proved that one of them's against Dundee and we struggled in the second half of that most recent encounter with Dundee. So if we could close that gap to the likes of Hibs and Kilmarnock, there's no reason why the likes of myself can't now start looking up the table rather than over our shoulders. And I think it is important for Neil Warnock to kind of hit the ground running and make us that hard to beat team and grinding out the wins. And interesting, after the Bonnie Rigg game, it is Hibs and Motherwell that do come up teams in and around us in the table right now.
Were there any other names that were in the mix that you were open to seeing in the dugout?
I was touting John Eustace's name on the podcast. I know that the caveat of that is he's inexperienced in terms of a lot of fans are wanting us to go down the experience route, given the likes of Stephen Glass, Robson and Jim Goodwin. But if John Eustace was good enough to be touted for the Rangers job, as he was still when in Birmingham, why not? Why can't he come to Aberdeen? For me, that was the one name, given that he's currently out of work just now, that appealed from a financial point of view. But I know my co-host Callum was looking at Jimmy Thielen, who's at Elfsborg, recently signed a new contract there. But a lot of people are kind of broadening their horizons to managers on the continent rather than kind of just sticking to the regular that are here in the UK.
So no avid fans of Neil Lennon then, I suppose.
No, and it was not me with the banner in the RDS at the game Saturday with the Lennon. Emphasis on the no.
It's Miolski against Navrotsky at the moment. Miolski! That was the moment he was waiting for. And very much against the run of play. Aberdeen have the lead. They've shocked and startled the champions.
Right, guys, let's stay with Aberdeen in our little SPFL roundup, because obviously they held Celtic to a 1-1 draw. What's your guys' reaction? We've heard from an Aberdeen fan. I mean, by the time people are listening to this, Neil Warnock could actually be named as the new Aberdeen boss. first of all, reaction to that, and what about some of the other linked names that, that could make an impact at Aberdeen? I'll go to you, Andrew.
Warnock coming in, I think, would really mix things up. And let's be honest about it as well. You know, you see it on social media, person after person tells you about how the SPFL is unrivaled and this is so Scottish football and that's so Scottish football. I mean, Neil Warnock would be peak Scottish football. Some of the stuff that he's got up to over the years. This week, I saw, I don't know what Twitter account it was maybe the official FA Cup Twitter account or whatever, posted an on this day, and the story was going back to, I think it was 2010. At this point, Warnock is manager of Crystal Palace. They're playing Wolves in the Cup. Now, I think they had sold Victor Moses. They had a bit of a gap up front. And this coincides, apparently, with Neil Warnock's wife, Sharon, having a dream that the right-back would score the winner against Wolves. So, 31-year-old Danny Butterfield, who has waited 2 years for his next goal, gets stuck up front and scores a hat-trick in 6 minutes and 48 seconds, the quickest battle in history, as they beat Wolves 4-1. So, wow. I am all for that kind of thing happening in Scottish football, because we were talking earlier about how tired the Challenge Cup is. That is the polar opposite. Neil Warnock, he's 75 and he's still got the enthusiasm and life of a 25-year-old. I think he'd be brilliant. I think he'd be great value. He would not care at all about coming in and upsetting the Old Firm or anybody else. He probably would try to rile other people up and create a bit of a siege mentality thing, which he's done so successfully. He did it at Huddersfield. They were absolutely lost last season. Mm. Went in, saved them. He's got that kind of success. You know, success is measured in different ways. You know, Pep Guardiola wins trophy after trophy after trophy as a manager. For me, Neil Warnock is a really successful manager doing what he does best. Yeah. He's like a turnaround specialist almost. You know, he comes in and he mixes things up. I think he'd be a brilliant addition to Scottish football.
He's perfect, isn't he, Finn? He's perfect.
I think he would be great. I think not just for the banter, but it is. I always find it really interesting because I think Warnock harks back to maybe a more nostalgic time in football of that kind of like, you know, the classic British football manager, which is all kind of like blood and thunder and effing this and effing that and maybe something from a different era. But the amazing thing about Warnock is that he's not a dinosaur in terms of running a football team. Like there's something that he can still do, as you just alluded to with Huddersfield. And he's the most promoted manager in English football history. Is that right? He's taken teams up to the Premier League more times than any other manager. So he's kind of in that way that like a lot of the great managers, they will know how to be true to themselves, but still know how to adapt and evolve in an ever-changing game. And Warnock's been like that. So I think it would be good. I'm more wondering about the long-term impact here, because again, for what, the second or third season in a row, Aberdeen have sacked a manager halfway through the season. And now they're looking to, well, do we do it as a short-term fix or do we try and get somebody in? And it seems to have been, I mean, Robson did well in his interim stage and earned getting the job. Like how could you not give him the job after what he did in those? But then was there any real discernible progress going on? And with Aberdeen trying to be so forward-thinking as much as they can be off the pitch, I don't see that how that's been mirrored so many times with their decisions managerially on it. Warnock would be a short-term answer. There's no doubt. But that may not be the worst thing, as you say, Andrew, to come in and a bit of a boot up the arse, give them a different perspective. He's a big name coming in. And I think maybe at a club like Aberdeen, where there is a weight of expectation, they should be the third team comfortably with their budget and everything else in the country. And they haven't been more often than not in the last number of years since McInnes left. I think you need a certain level of stature to do well at a club like Aberdeen, where you've got that pressure. And I think Warnock's got that as well. In terms of a much more longer term option, I am surprised that there's not much more of a clamour over somebody, say, like Rhys McCabe at Airdrie, who we've already talked about, into the final of the Challenge Cup, because I think on paper, that's actually the kind of manager Aberdeen should be looking to potentially bring in, because of what he's been able to do with the meagre resources he's got at Airdrie. He got them promoted when they shouldn't have been, really, last season. The style of football his team plays is excellent. They pass teams off the pitch quite frequently, Airdrie. And I just think, to me, that's a much actually more intelligent, progressive type of appointment and a long-term one to make that they could do. Warnock and maybe some of the other names that have been linked. You've got Neil Lennon's always going to get linked with this type of job. I just think kind of screams more of short-termism and not building into something that I think Aberdeen should be looking to do, which is a much more holistic, progressive, forward-thinking way of operating as a football club as a whole, and not just this kind of constant reactive type of football club, which has left them, I don't think, in a particularly brilliant position consistently over the last number of years.
I would say, just to sum up, is the fact that this is a free hit for Aberdeen if they get someone like Warnock in. Just that idea of getting it to the summer, it gives the board time to just assess who the right person is after the season is over. I think it's the right way to go after the total shambles of the last 3 years have been for Aberdeen.
I think the key thing with Warnock, if he was to come in, so you mentioned Lennon. Lennon would come in and he'd want it long term. Like, I know you're saying, you know, that it would be like smacks of short termism. Obviously, it does with Warnock as well, but I think Warnock would be very comfortable with it being a short term thing. Yeah. And I think him mixing things up, you know, tearing up the book a little bit and saying, right, you're doing this, you're not doing that anymore. Just getting in and, you know, he's not got a transfer window to work in now, so he's pretty limited with what he can do, but has shown time and time and time again that with limited resources, he can actually do something. And it would buy Aberdeen time, actually, to sort out that problem that they have had recurring season after season where it turns out they've appointed the wrong guy and the wrong guy and the wrong guy. So, you know, in some respects, yeah, you can say, well, it's not a very big vision that they've got there, bringing in a 75-year-old to kind of steady the ship. On the other hand, I think it's actually smart.
Totally agree. And he's if he is in place before the game against Rangers on Tuesday, he will fucking love that. There's one thing that Neil Warnock, I have worked very closely with Neil Warnock for a long time. He just doesn't give a fuck. He cares about winning and he cares about his players and he fucking loves the training ground, but he doesn't give a fuck. Like, he will do what he wants to do and what he thinks is the right thing to do. Yeah. But it's so funny working with him. I did a shoot with him where we went to Cambridge United. He took a training session and basically all the players came out saying that was the best training session they'd had in ages. He's so fun and he creates really fun environments. Especially, I mean, he was coming in for one session. So he was saying, I remember him saying to me, like, players love this. It's just fun. There's no pressure. Just let them play the game. And if you can create that environment, that's clearly what he does. But he doesn't give a fuck. And he will do what he wants. And it will be so, so much fun to have him around the place.
I think Neil Warnock is possibly the football equivalent of Francis Begbie in the scene in Trainspotting when they're up in the and he's like, takes a drink, chucks a pint glass. It's like, right, here we go. That's honestly, if he's in
position, stir the pot.
That's exactly what he will be like going down to Ibrox.
This lassie got glassed and no cunt's loving till we found out what cunt done it.
Regrets, no, it's good laugh on it. So
I didn't find it funny.
Guys, can we talk about Stephen Naismith? Is he getting the recognition properly? Because Hearts, a wonderful comeback over Dundee at the weekend. Two goals, unsurprisingly, from Lauren Shankland, just cementing how much he's focusing on his football rather than stuff going on in the background. A late winner it was as well, to be said. But Naismith has had his doubters all season, but they're comfortably third now. They've managed, they've gone through, you know, a difficult period with injuries. Is he really kind of potentially up there for a Manager of the Season award?
I think it's been really impressive. What actually might be annoying to him and certainly to Hearts fans was that kind of fairly tepid start to the season where they lost quite a few games. If they'd been in this kind of form that they're in now all season, like, they could be pushing first and second place. They really could be, because I think they're only about 10 points behind Rangers in third at the moment. I've read this, they've picked up more points than Celtic in their last 15 games. And I think you're right to point out the fact that they've survived quite a lot of injuries. Like, the injury list at the start of the season was fairly horrendous, and it's really difficult to get any kind of consistency going when you've got so many players dropping in and out of the team. But winning games is one thing, of course it is, and it's the most important thing. But it's when you look at the results, when they're scoring in matches, the way that they're consistently coming back from if they lose the opening goal or they're going a goal behind or two goals behind even sometimes, they're not out of it. There's something about the mentality, the way that they are going for the 90 minutes. I think was there not some sort of crazy stat that the last 14 goals have all come in the second half?
Yeah.
And that to me would point to things like, well, concentration's one, and drive, like not giving up, but also your fitness. I think these are all the things that they're to be commended from, not just Naismith, but the whole coaching staff at Hearts. Because I think some people were kind of, you know, rightly so at the start of the season, kind of mocking, like, is this, what kind of appointment is this? And is he really cut out for it? Well, we did. We were like, is he cut out for a job at this level this soon? But as the season's progressed, like, I think he's doing a terrific job with Hearts this season.
It's really difficult for managers when they've almost lost the fans to get them back. And I think that's perhaps the situation that Stephen Naismith now finds himself in, because Hearts fans, if you go like back 3 months, you know, relatively unpopular with Hearts fans at that point. And then he got a Manager of the Month award in about October or November, I think it was, because they'd had a good run of results. And from there, Hearts have just gone and they're in terrific form. That stat that you're saying about Finn, it was Mark Donaldson, who used to work at Hearts many years ago. He's at ESPN over in the States now.
Yeah.
Big jambo, and he tweeted it after the game, saying, right enough, it's the last 14 league goals have been scored in the second half. And what you were saying about the fitness is absolutely spot on, because I think 8 of those 14 goals were in the last 20 minutes, which, wow. You know, that, I mean, that's a team that is really, you know, you've seen the Old Firm do that habitually over the years. So it's great to see one of the other teams doing it as well. Don't forget as well, he's been involved in the national team coaching staff as well.
He has, yeah.
It's not just that he's a youth coach who happens to have found himself there in the job because there's nobody else to take it. He has kind of done his time, if you like. Hearts, absolutely, at the moment, are producing a string of good results, which, as you say, comfortably third. And that's ahead of a Kilmarnock team that has done pretty well this season as well. So, yeah, absolutely to be commended. I think he's doing a great job.
Just wish he would cheer the fuck up as well. His post-match interviews, man. Oh, my. He's definitely learning from Steve Clarke, who's a very good manager. But his interviews, he's just so bloody miserable all the time. Oh, we won 3-2. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, really fantastic. But we need to do better. Cheer up, man. But there you go. Happy times at St Mirren again. Emphatic 3-0 winners against Hibs, who are struggling a wee bit. Surprised at this result, Finn?
I was a little, because I think this is the second time St Mirren have beaten Hibs at Easter Road this season. I think the first one was it maybe Hibs went 2-0 up or something, and then St Mirren managed to get it back to 3-2 when they were on that great run at the start of the season. But with Hibs, I think when Nick Montgomery came in, and certainly for the majority of the time that he's been there this season, they have been much better, I think, better organised, more cohesive. Players look that they know what they're doing. But Hibs still have this lapse of concentration so often. And they just, it's whether it was Montgomery or Johnson or any of the other guys coming before that, it just seems to be they can't really shake off this kind of Jekyll and Hyde nature. It's like they could go 3 or 4 games where they've been brilliant, they're getting the points on the board and everything, and then they just, for no apparent reason, get scudded at home 3-0. Or, you know, they'll lose to a team that they really shouldn't be losing to. And it's like no manager can really seem to break this inconsistency and find this kind of just baseline level that they should be performing at. It has been a tricky month in that they've lost a couple of their players, and quite key players, to the AFCON and to the Asia Cup, especially Martin Boyle's been away with Australia, as has Miller, the fullback. But you can't really underestimate how important Boyle is, not just in terms of the goals or the assists. It's just having that dynamism in the side is so important to the way that Hibs play. And he's like this talismanic presence in the side. I think to not have had that for a month has been really tricky for them. So they'll be delighted to have him back. Australia knocked out just the other day, so he'll be back for the next couple of games, which I think will be a big step up for them.
Do you know what I think Hibs would really benefit from? A manager like Neil Warnock coming in and doing things about
Hibs winless in 6 matches. I think they haven't won a game since early December. St Mirren still battling for another top 6 finish. St Johnstone had a huge win at the weekend. I say huge, they'd drawn their last 3, but just to get over that, the first win in a long time for them against Ross County, it's kind of opened up that little bit of gap. Now I think it's 5 points that separate them and Ross County. So St Johnston currently in ninth. They're doing really well under Craig Levine, who also likes to have a laugh. I can't wait until he comes up against Neil Warnock. He might not even get the job, Warnock, kind of already talking about he's already in the game. There was no Kevin Van Veen display at the weekend for Kilmarnock. Obviously, Kilmarnock drew 1-1 against Motherwell. It would have been fun to see Kevin score against his old club, but that didn't happen. And then Livingston, it just gets worse and worse for them. Rangers 3-0 winners, obviously with Celtic drawing at the weekend against Aberdeen. That was the early kickoff, so Rangers came into the 3 o'clock knowing that they had to win, and they did. But I know there's a title race now, guys, but let's just leave Rangers for now and say, is Livingston, is there any comeback from where they are right now? Because it doesn't look like it. And Martindale has also came out and said that he's found his fire in his belly again, but... Where's this going to happen? When is it going to happen?
Well, I think he left the fire in West Lothian yesterday, because I was at the game, and I mean, I think all the stats, it was like no shots on target, like very little of anything. Then they had two touches in the Rangers box. Jack Butland, literally, I think the most exertion that I saw from Jack Butland was when he turned around to wave to the fans for singing a song about him. Livingston are not in a good place. I don't know how they change it. We're beyond the window now. I don't know if they can change it. They're starting to look a little bit adrift there. Was it 6 points or something? I think it is now. St Johnston, you know, a win yesterday, 3 draws in a row before it. I know some fans are maybe not totally enjoying the style of football under Craig Levein, but they are getting results, that are getting some points on the board. And when you're in that position, that is key. It doesn't really matter how stylish it is. Yeah. And as it is, Livingston have no style at the moment, and also are not picking up points. I think there's only one way that they're going at the end of the season.
Oh, well. Let's hope Neil Warnock goes in at Livingston in the summer. Right, well, that's it. That's it for another podcast of the Scottish Football Show. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you, Andrew, and you, Finlay. And, of course, thanks to Glenn for talking about Aberdeen. It's going to be fun. If you have enjoyed listening to this, find us on everywhere. We're just everywhere. But YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, everywhere. Just find us, add us, subscribe to us. Tell us that you like us. I need it. Thanks for listening, and go and listen to something else now. Goodbye.